A public meeting will be held tonight to discuss the possible closure of the Douglas Post Office. The branch is among thousands nationwide being considered for shuttering by the financially strapped agency. An unnamed official from the Postal Service's Anchorage District Office will discuss the reasons for a possible closure and to get input from people interested in saving it. Douglas resident Suzanne Williams hopes for a good turnout.
It's part of our identity, 99824. And if it closes, what do we do then? We go to street delivery, but then for special needs, if you're a senior or if you do not have a car, it takes half a day. You could either got to spend all morning getting over to the federal building and back again, or you got to spend all afternoon.
Information about the meeting is posted at the Douglas Post Office, and tonight's meeting is from 7 to 9 p.m. at Mount Jumbo Gym. That's at 909 4th Street in Douglas. Meanwhile, the head of the Postal Service warned Congress yesterday that the agency could lose $10 billion in the fiscal year that ends this month, putting it in danger of defaulting as it reaches its borrowing limit. Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe is asking Congress to let it break union contracts to fire employees, change retirees' health benefits, and end mail delivery on Saturdays. He testified before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, where Alaska Senator Mark Begich questioned the plan to cut Saturday service.
We're concerned about this from a variety of reasons, the rural component, but also as a small business person, what it will impact a small business owner who really depends on as much delivery time as possible. They're not corporate. They don't have mail runners to go package up their stuff and ship it over to the post office. The owner has to do it, and they have to go do it. And small businesses depend on delivery as well as making sure that they get their mail coming in for supplies and so forth. How do you respond to that?
Begich says he's especially concerned about very small businesses, those with 15 employees and fewer. Donahoe says of all possible places to cut, Saturday service makes the most sense.
Generally, the volume is about 10-15% lower on Saturday than the rest of the week. We will keep post offices open on Saturday, so people would have access to our 30,000-plus post offices.
For shipping packages and so forth for the small business.
Right. We'd be able to provide that service. Now, we will not be running what we call outgoing mail that night, so that mail would go out on Monday. But they would have the access to our services.
Alaskans got news last month that 25 of the 36 post offices in the state being considered for shuttering are safe for now. Senator Begich said that news came in a meeting with Postal Service officials and rural community groups concerned about the harm closures in remote communities could bring. 11 Alaskan post offices are still being eyed for closure, and exactly which ones are being spared remains to be seen. Release of the list was delayed because postal officials said they had to focus on problems in the wake of Hurricane Irene on the East Coast. But that was more than a week ago. With rare earth prices skyrocketing, a Canadian company has come up with an aggressive schedule to begin mining the coveted minerals on Prince of Wales Island within 4 years. Deanna Garrison recently visited the mine site and has more on the story.
Based in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Ucore Rare Earth Metals Incorporated is spending a projected $8 million this summer exploring the deposit at Bokan. The company is hoping to drum up investor interest in the project, which by all accounts appears to be one of the most promising deposits of heavy rare earths in the U.S., if not the world. Visitors are brought to the company's floating camp in Kendrick Bay, where some 22 crew members eat and sleep during their stints at the secluded mine. Ucore Vice President of Exploration Harmon Kaiser greets us with mineral samples collected since the company began exploration at Bokan in 2007.
We're looking at a piece of rare earth mineralization from Bokan Mountain, and it consists of a variety of a complex of rare earth minerals and accessory minerals, including chlorite, magnetite, fluorite, albite, and quartz.
Inside the floating camp, Ucore CEO Jim McKenzie explains to the group that rare earth metals, especially heavy rare earths, are, well, rare.
Certainly, in terms of relativity, Bokan's it for the United States.
McKenzie describes heavy rare earths as steroids for other minerals. He says they are used widely in the high-tech, clean energy, and multiple other industries.
Heavy rare earths are used extensively in the aviation industry. They're used a great deal in military applications. The U.S. Department of Defense is very dependent on heavy rare earths for radar and sonar and for remote missiles and smart weapons and the whole gamut. You can't have high-tech military applications today without heavy rare earths. And then it goes well beyond that, obviously. They're absolutely indispensable to the automotive industry. Light and heavy rare earths are used in batteries for electric vehicles.
Ucor originally acquired the Bokan site in 2006 in hopes of reviving the property's uranium mine. At the time, McKenzie says a company was aware of a 1989 U.S. Geological Survey report estimating a high concentrate of rare earths at Bokan, but rare earth prices were low. Soon thereafter, uranium prices tanked. The value of heavy rare earth minerals then shot through the roof when China, which produces 97% of the world's heavy rare earths, announced it was scaling back its heavy rare earth exports.
The U.S. is the world's largest consumer of end product, and China is the world's largest monopolistic producer of the product. They produce essentially 100% of the rare earths that are consumed in the world right now, and due to their most recent five-year plan, they are withdrawing the product from international arenas, and that has triggered the tech metals crisis and a term that I love, rare earth mania.
Probably an understatement.
That's what Dan Cordier, a rare earth commodity specialist with the U.S. Geological Survey, thinks of the term rare earth mania.
Rare earth is probably one of the hottest commodities for sure in my lifetime and probably over the past 80 years. I don't think I've ever seen or read about any kind of hype that we're witnessing in the rare earths.
For instance, dysprosium, one of the heavy rare earths at Bokan, has quadrupled in price since April. Hoping to capitalize on the meteoric rise in prices, Ucor wants to permit and build the mine at Bokan in 4 years.
By 2013, we're hoping to be in a position where we can break ground and start building our mine, have the mine constructed by 2015, so in 4 years. And it's a doable scenario, and that's what we're shooting for. Certainly, if it wasn't for permitting, we could have the mine constructed a great deal quicker than that. Obviously, we're in the civilized world, and we have to go through permitting and so forth. So the good news is that it looks like both the Alaskan government and the federal government are behind us to expedite permitting and have this happen as quickly as possible.
Cordier says Ucor's timeline is extremely ambitious.
It'll take quite a bit of research and development to bring that mine into production. Normally it takes anywhere from 7 to 15 years for a mine to come online.
To date, the company has drilled 143 holes at Bokan. So far, Ucor has identified a deposit of 60 million pounds of total rare earth oxides at Bokan. The company expects to mine 500 to 800 tons a day. Based on Ucor's current exploration estimates, the company says a mine would operate for 20 to 30 years. However, if the company finds as much mineralization as it expects, the mine life could extend to 60 years or beyond. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Sea Alaska Corporation says a dispute is not likely to harm plans to get a Southeast seafood plant up and running. Seattle businessman Roger May is attempting to claim ownership of equipment at the Cake Seafoods plant. Sea Alaska spokeswoman Dixie Hutchinson says Cake Tribal has filed a counterclaim. She says Sea Alaska operates the plant, but Cake Tribal owns the equipment. Cake Tribal's new CEO, Vicki Wolf, says she's still trying to sort out conflicting claims. She says it's her understanding that the Tribal Corporation owns all of the plant's equipment.